In the sixth Aliyah in Parsha Shmos, Moshe now has the task of going back to Mitzrayim, but we find that first he consults with his father-in-law, with Yisro, and the Aliyah begins, Vayelech Moshe v'yashu v'yasr chosno, v'yomer lo el chano v'yashuv el achay yashir b'mitzrayim v'era ha'odom chayim v'yomer Yisro l'moshe leich l'shalom. And the Medrash Rabbah tells us that Moshe conveyed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that even though I have this mission, I first have to ask permission from my father-in-law, from Yisro, who took me in, who gave me this hospitality when I needed it. And I have to express this Hakaras HaTov. And Chaim Yaakov Goldwicht comments about this, that it's quite a fascinating idea, because as important as Hakaras HaTov is, it's hard to imagine that it is doche, a obligation from God, that we push away a direct commandment from God, especially because if we understand that Hakaras HaTov is an obligation to the individual who has benefited you, that person also has an obligation to God. So certainly he would understand that whatever God commands has to come first. And Rav Goldwicht emphasized that the answer here lies in the specific language that the Medrash uses, that Moshe essentially says, Eini yachol, that it's impossible for me to ignore the obligation that I have of Hakaras HaTov here, that here I have been treated with kindness, and this creates a realistic obligation that I can't turn away from. And God acknowledges that, not because of the mechanics of one mitzvah overriding another, but essentially that's a reality, and that's something that can't be denied. So we find that he gets this permission, and Moshe is also told by God that he should go to Mitzrayim, ki mesu kol hanashim hamavakshim es nafshecha, because all of those who wish you dead are no longer alive, or perhaps no longer active, because Rashi tells us this is a reference to Dasan v'Aviram, who are not actually dead, but they are impoverished, and therefore they are comparable to dead, they are as good as dead as far as whatever danger they pose. So the significance of this statement is the topic of some discussion, and the Meshech Chachma has a comment over here that apparently the implication is that had it not been the case that those who posed a threat to Moshe were no longer dangerous, he wouldn't have to go, even though he has the job to rescue the Jewish people, he wouldn't have had to go if it were not for the fact that those who were after him were no longer active. And that's a fascinating idea. He notes that this is also what we find by somebody who is golet to an ir miklat, somebody who has killed b'shogeg, and now he is vulnerable to being killed by the gol hadam. He is supposed to stay in the ir miklat, and he doesn't leave, even if all of Klal Yisrael needs him. So apparently, even if that's the case, even if he needs to save others, if he's going to expose himself to danger, he doesn't have to do it. And he notes that this is a topic of machlokas, that the Hagos Maimini quotes from the Yerushalmi Trumas, the Kesef Mishnah quotes the Hagos Maimini, that one does have an obligation to enter into a possible sakana in order to save others, and the Meshech Chachma disagrees here and also in his Sefer Samech in Hilchos Rotzeach. So this is a major debate, the question of entering into a possible sakana in order to save others who are in definite danger right now. And this is one of the major considerations as far as whether one negotiates with terrorists in order to rescue hostages, the topic of a tshuva of Rav Avadya Yosef and many others. And among the considerations that they bring up is if it's going to require releasing prisoners who are going to be a danger to society right now or a possible danger, so is that worth it to cause a possible danger right now, a suffix sakana, in order to rescue those who are in definite danger right now? And these considerations of trading a possible danger now for a definite rescue at this time, if that's the case. So that involves issues of Ein Sofek Motzei Midei Vadai. How do we weigh a definite rescue against a possible danger? Even though normally we do not trade one life for another, does that calculation change when we're dealing with Sofek and Vadai, with indefinite and definite circumstances? So all of this is part of the calculation, and this is a topic of dispute regarding this pasuk as well. But we also find sakana of a different nature in this aliyah because of the delay in giving a bris milah to Moshe's son. And Sipora takes the matter into her own hands, and she performs the bris milah. And this is a topic of debate as well, because the Gemara Maseches Avodah Zarah and Daf Chav Zayin Amud Beis has a discussion as to whether or not a isha is kosher, is qualified to perform a bris milah. The Gemara has a discussion, how do we know what would be the issue with a non-Jew performing a bris milah? Two possible sources. And the Gemara says that one of the sources would lead to a disqualification of women who are not subject to a bris milah from performing a bris milah as well. So the Gemara raises the question, so what would be the explanation of how we see in the Torah explicitly that Sipora performed the bris milah? So the Gemara says, according to that opinion, that there is an issue with women performing the bris, we'd have to assume that either the Torah meant that she instructed somebody else to do it and credits her with bringing it about, or that she started it and Moshe actually finished it. But lahalacha, we assume that a woman is kasher to do a bris milah. The Gemara in Maseches Kiddushin on Daf Chof Tes tells us that a woman is pater from giving a bris milah to her son. It's not her obligation. The obligation is on the father. The Gemara derives that from the pasuk oso and not osa. Tosfos over there raises the question that why don't we assume that she should be patura anyway, because this obligation is a mitzvah saseh shahazman grama. Why is that the case? Because the bris can't be performed before the eighth day, and even after the eighth day, it can't take place at night. So Tosfos gives the answer that maybe this is assuming like the opinion that a bris after the eighth day can take place at night. So that question of whether or not there is theoretically an exemption on that level of mitzvah asesha hazman grama is itself a discussion. Some suggest that maybe since there is an onesh associated with not giving a bris milah, it's one of the two positive mitzvahs that have a punishment, this and Korban Pesach, so therefore maybe for some purposes we treat it like a negative mitzvah, like a lo saseh, and women are not exempt from lo saseh, so we need another source to tell us that women are exempt from the obligation to give a bris to her son. So it may make a difference. Some achronim point out that if we say that it's treated as a mitzvah saseh as man grama, so then women may be completely excluded from the obligation, while if we derive it from the language of the pasuk, which puts her responsibility on the father specifically, so then maybe it means it's not her responsibility, but she's not completely excluded. And that could go to the question of whether or not she should be removed from the possibility of performing a kosher bris out of the category that she's not shaykh to the mitzvah at all. She's not a part of the mitzvah in any sense of the word, which is a category some of the Rishonim established, that somebody who's not a part of a mitzvah completely shouldn't be qualified to perform that mitzvah. So the halach, again, the Shulchan Aruch adopts the view that a woman is kasher to perform a bris milah, like we find that Tzipora did, but he writes that if there is a male who is able to do it, so he takes priority. And the Ramah seems like he's reformulating the same words. The Ramah says, Yesh Omrim de Isha lo simol. There are those who say that a woman should not perform a bris milah, v'chein no again lahadar achar ish. And so the minig is to seek after a man to perform the bris. So the Vilna Gaon and the Shach, they both raise the question that it's not clear what the Ramah is adding. It seems like he's essentially reformulating what the Shulchan Aruch says. They both say that this is the topic of machlokes, and that ideally one should have a man perform the bris milah, so what's the difference? What's he adding? So Torah Tamima discusses this, and he suggests that there is a difference in emphasis, that the Shulchan Aruch is saying that it's simply preferable to have a man perform the bris, so if you have equally available both a man and a woman, so then the man should perform it. But the Ramah is saying more than that. The Ramah is saying that it's really not appropriate to have a woman perform the bris, that the minig is not that way, so therefore even if a man's not available, you should actively go look for one in order to fulfill this minig. Not so much so, he writes, that you would let the eighth day pass, because the obligation to perform the bris on the eighth day would still take priority, but you would still exert an effort to find a man to perform the milah because of the minig. And the Shach raises the question that it's hard to say that there actually is a minig here, because when something isn't common in the first place and it's a negative, it's something that doesn't happen, so how do we establish that that's actually a matter of custom? This is an issue that is also a discussion in Hilcha Shechita. In the beginning of Hilcha Shechita, the question of whether there is a minig for women not to perform Shechita, a very similar issue, There also, the Mishnah tells us that women are kosher to perform shechita, but apparently there's a minig not to do that, and there's a whole discussion, how do we know if it's a minig that is based on what doesn't happen? So here, the Shach raises the question, should we say that it's hard to determine that there's a minig for women not to perform bris milah when it's not something that we would be able to notice based on its lack of commonality and its being a negative? So the Tar Tzmim addresses that also, and he says that that's not really a reasonable point here, because were it to be the case that women would be acceptable to perform a bris milah by matter of custom, so then it certainly would happen that there would be women who would train to do it, and we would see it happening. So the fact that we don't see it happening is significant in this case, and we can assume that indeed that is the practice, that the minig is not to, and that that is what the Rama is emphasizing here.